The AC Podcast is a ministry of Apologetics Canada and is supported by the generous donations of our listeners. If you would like to partner with us in this ministry, please go to apologeticscanada.com.
Hey, welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim.
Andy Steiger.
Terry Crosby.
Andy is a bit slow this morning.
I'm still waking up, boys.
Are you?
You know what? I want to start off this podcast with a beef that I got with Terry.
Uh-oh.
Terry, you're a jerk, man.
What?
You come to the podcast last week on your birthday, and you just play it cool, man, pretending like you didn't turn 50-something.
What? That's news to me. Wow.
How dare you?
See, that's what I knew was going to happen.
Yeah. You knew I was going to gently
put me in the
kindly
50 to 60 range. Yeah, okay. I just wanted to be a blessing,
and you robbed me of the opportunity.
I'm sorry, man.
Happy belated birthday.
Well, yeah, happy birthday, Terry.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, Terry.
This is a good one.
I'll be the judge of that.
Okay, this happened in Cardiff, Wales at City Arms Pub.
This is going to be a good one.
Yeah. The pub turned away a group of seven seminarians because they were mistaken for a stag party in their fancy dress. They were turned away initially by somebody at the door, one of their bouncers. So they started leaving, and the manager heard them praying. So he goes out because they were dressed in their white collars and their cassocks, and he welcomes them back in. Like, sorry about that, guys. We didn't know you. We thought you were a stag party. In their collars and cassocks.
Did he think like they were just dressed up for this thing?
Yeah.
That's weird, what man.
They did. Man.
Well, so first, isn't it not a little weird that you can't have a stag party? Like, maybe it gets too rowdy in the UK, I guess.
Yeah, they just don't really. Okay, so they were very apologetic, and they decided because this mishap and this misunderstanding that they'd name a beer after them. So they call it the Thirsty Priests. It's described as a rich, warming ale with a clean, rewarding finish.
That is hysterical.
Is that true? They actually did. They named
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they did.
Wow.
So, you know, they go there quite often, I guess, but this time they got mistaken as a stag party.
Wow.
That is funny.
There you have it.
All right. Well, let's move on to something a bit more, well, I guess even more bizarre, like, to my mind.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of listeners, I think, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard us mention nihilism a number of times. Nihilism basically is the idea that there are no objective meaning or value in this world. We find ourselves in this massive universe that is almost entirely hostile to our existence, but we just happen to be here for just a blip on this massive timeline.
Long enough to know that everything is meaningless, valueless, purposeless.
So a lot of people take nihilism to be a very depressing thing. But recently, somebody that we know sent us a video that actually puts a different spin on nihilism, and it's called optimistic nihilism, which is very counterintuitive if you've kind of studied nihilism for a bit. So what we're going to do is, rather than us trying to hash out what optimistic nihilism is, we'll just play the video so you can actually listen to it. It's actually like an animated thing. So if you want to, you can go to our show notes and watch the animation along with the narration here. But optimistic nihilism, here it is.
Human existence is scary and confusing. A few hundred thousand years ago, we became conscious and found ourselves in a strange place. It was filled with other beings. We could eat some could eat us. There was liquid stuff we could drink, things we could use to make more things. The daytime sky had a tiny yellow ball that warmed our skin. The night sky was filled with beautiful lights. This place was obviously made for us. Something was watching over us. We were home. This made everything much less scary and confusing. But the older we got, the more we learned about the world and ourselves. we learn that the twinkling lights are not shining beautifully for us, they just are. We learn that we're not at the center of what we now call the universe, and that it is much, much older than we thought. We learn that we're made of many little dead things, which make up bigger things that are not dead for some reason, and that we're just another temporary stage in a history going back over a billion years. We learned, in awe, that we live on a moist speck of dust moving around a medium-sized star in a quiet region of one arm of an average galaxy, which is part of a galaxy group that we will never leave. And this group is only one of thousands that together make up a galaxy supercluster. But even our supercluster is only one in thousands that make up what we call the observable universe. The universe might be a million times bigger, but we will never know. We could throw words around like 200 billion galaxies or trillions of stars or bazillions of planets, but all of these numbers mean nothing. Our brains can't comprehend these concepts. The universe is too big. There is too much of it. But size is not the most troubling concept we have to deal with. It's time, or more precisely, the time we have. If you're lucky enough to live to 100, you have 5,200 weeks at your disposal. If you're 25 now, then you have 3,900 weeks left. If you're going to die at 70, then there are 2,340 weeks left. A lot of time, but also not really. And then what? Your biological processes will break down, and the dynamic pattern that is you will stop being dynamic. It will dissolve until there is no you left. Some believe that there is a part of us we can't see or measure, but we have no way to find out. So this life might be it, and we might end up dead forever. This is less scary than it sounds, though. If you don't remember the 13.75 billion years that went by before you existed, then the trillions and trillions and trillions of years that come after will pass in no time once you're gone. Close your eyes. Count to one. That's how long forever feels. And as far as we know, in the end, the universe itself will die and nothing will ever change again. Our videos induce existential dread in many people, and the last few minutes probably haven't helped. So for once, we want to offer a different way of looking at these things. An unscientific, subjective point of view. The philosophy of Kurzgesagt, if you want. Please take it with a grain of salt. We don't know any more about human existence than you do. We counter existential dread with optimistic nihilism. What do we mean by that? Well, to summarize, it seems very unlikely that 200 trillion trillion stars have been made for us. In a way, it feels like the cruelest joke in existence has been played on us. We became self-aware, only to realize this story is not about us. While it is great to know about electrons and the powerhouse of the cell, science doesn't do a lot to make this less depressing. Okay, but so what? You only get one shot at life, which is scary, but it also sets you free. If the universe ends in heat death, every humiliation you suffer in your life will be forgotten. Every mistake you made will not matter in the end. Every bad thing you did will be voided. If our life is all we get to experience, then it's the only thing that matters. If the universe has no principles, the only principles relevant are the ones we decide on. If the universe has no purpose, then we get to dictate what its purpose is. Humans will most certainly cease to exist at some point. But before we do, we get to explore ourselves and the world around us. We get to experience feelings. We get to experience food, books, sunrises, and being with each other. The fact that we're even able to think about these things is already kind of incredible. It's easy to think of ourselves as separated from everything, but this is not true. We are as much the universe as a neutron star, or a black hole, or a nebula. Even better, actually, we are its thinking and feeling part, the sensory organs of the universe. We are truly free in a universe-sized playground. So we might as well aim to be happy and to build some kind of utopia in the stars. It's not as if we found out everything there is to know. We don't know why the rules of the universe are as they are, how life came into existence, what life is. We have no idea what consciousness is, or if we are alone in the universe. But we can try to find some answers. There are billions of stars to visit, diseases to cure, people to help, happy feelings to be experienced, and video games to finish. There is so much to do. So, wrapping up, you've probably used up a good chunk of the time available to you. If this is our one shot at life, there is no reason not to have fun and live as happily as possible. bonus points if you make the life of other people better, more bonus points if you help build a galactic human empire. Do the things that make you feel good. You get to decide whatever this means for you.
All right. Well, there you have it.
Terry's not getting any bonus points.
I want bonus points.
I want bonus points.
Well, there's...
Well, lots can be said about that.
Yeah, there's so much that we can... especially if you've been kind of with us for a while and soaking in our perspective, if you will. I'm sure you have lots to say, too. But what was your reaction to watching?
I just feel really down right now. I feel really low. I feel
that,
like
that
nothing
existential
at all.
Dread has come upon you.
It has.
You know what? I have mixed emotions with videos like this. On the one hand, I know this might sound weird, but on the one hand, I'm almost thankful for videos like this. First of all, did you guys see the eclipse that took place?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Went out, participated. My wife and I, we were outside just taking it in, you know, looking at it, thinking about it. And one of the things that goes through my mind is, as I'm sitting there, I'm sitting on my porch and I'm watching this amazing cosmic event, right? Here's this eclipse that's taking place. And everyone else around me in my neighborhood is just going along in their biz, right? People are going, getting groceries. I saw one of my neighbors comes out, takes out the trash. It's dark, by the way. Okay, at this point, my neighbor comes out of the house. It's dark. It's getting cold because the sun, you know, we had 90% coverage of the sun here in BC. So my neighbor comes out, takes out the garbage, goes, does some stuff, never once just stops and just takes in that they find themselves in an amazing universe, you know, with these amazing events. And here the moon is starting to cover the sun. Do you guys see where I'm going with all this? That it is so easy for people to just go along with their life and never stop. My neighbors seem to be like this, never stop to think about the predicament that they find themselves in, right? And this is what led me to seek God, is this idea that this video is trying to get at, except for I came to different conclusions than this person did. But I'm at least glad that that people are wanting to consider. As a Christian, I stop and I see something like the eclipse, and I think to myself, first of all, I just want to stop and just take it in and be like, this is amazing. You know, life is amazing. And I think, you know, at least the video gets at that idea that life is amazing, right? But now the question becomes, well, what are we going to do with that? When I look at the eclipse, what, you know, or when I just take in life, what is my reaction to that? You know, what are the conclusions that I'm coming to? Did these things just happen? Are they just cosmic events? Or is there something more to all of this? Is there a bigger picture to all of this? Now, this is where I think that this video gets really muddy, right? And this is why it's weird, this idea of optimistic nihilism, you know, trying to stay optimistic about a completely meaningless, purposeless, valueless existence.
Yeah. And you find that there are a lot of value judgments that are being made, right?
That's the irony of it.
Especially towards the end. I mean, the video kind of sets you up with a universe in which there is no objective meaning, value. And right at the end of the video, too, you know, the guy says, the narrator says, you know, you get to decide whatever feels good to you, whatever is meaningful to you. You know, we get to decide. If there is no meaning in the universe, it kind of sets you free because you can decide what that meaning is. And then it goes on to say, well, you know, bonus points if you helped somebody else in your life, that sort of thing. I'm like, okay, well, who gets to decide what that bonus point is? Well, how did you come up with that criterion? Is that binding on everybody? And if not, well, why should I even care?
Right. And they actually, in the video, kind of give you the criteria of what is good to do. Mm-hmm. And that is that, this is a quote, do what makes you feel good, is what the narrator is saying there. So what makes you feel good is, you know, is the right thing to do. But we all know that that has serious implications.
Yeah, immediately I'm thinking, because just because I've been reading this guy's biography, Carl Panzerum, right? The guy who murdered some over 20 people, according to his claims, and sodomized over 1,000 people. Like, he constantly...
That made him feel good.
Yeah. That he constantly referred to sodomy as the, you know, the finer things of civilized man, that sort of thing, right? That for him, that's what made him feel good. That's what empowered him. And so he went after other people and did horrible things to them.
So one of the other quotes is, we should aim to be happy and build some kind of utopian in the stars. So, I mean, how does he use that word happy? In what sense can he use that mm-hmm. in his viewpoint?
And I do think it's interesting, by the way, that what we see in human history is a constant attempt to build a utopia. Right, that's what politics, you know, is all about. This is what, you know, what we see historically with humanity throughout, you know, people trying to build a utopia, right? And so what does this utopia look like? Well, often, and particularly in this video, the utopia is that we get to dictate the purpose of the universe. Mm-hmm. And that purpose is whatever makes me happy.
Yeah. I mean, another quote here, he says, we can try to find some stars to visit, as in finding purpose, mm-hmm. diseases to cure, people to help, happy feelings to experience, and video games to finish.
See, this is where it just really bothers me, because all of the things that he talks about, all of the good things in life that you get to experience, I mean, if you've lived for any length of time on this little planet, you know, life isn't always full of good things, right? Some people are brought into this world, you know, they had no say in it. Like, none of us had a say in whether to be brought into this world or not. We're just kind of thrust into this world. And then many of us don't get to experience any of those good things, and we just die, get eaten up by worms and things like that. And so when I look at this rosy picture of what life is to be, I'm like, just how arrogant is that? This is the sort of thing that you can only talk about in this affluent Western cultures, right? Really, like,
and things get really muddied, especially when we look at this historically, when people have followed a life of pleasure, and then all of a sudden when you've chased after every pleasure that can be had and it still leaves you empty, I mean, this is when you really hit rock bottom, is you begin to realize just how lost you are to try to develop or make any sort of purpose for yourself in this universe. I want to back up a little bit though and just start making a few comments from the beginning of this video, because the video says a few things that in fact are true and I think are helpful for us to keep in mind. One of the things that it says that's true is that we only have a limited amount of time on this world. Mm-hmm. But it also is making the assumption that this is the only life that we have. I think it is interesting that it's making the assumption that there is nothing after this life. However, you have to ask the question, well, how do they know that? You know, how do they know that this...
There are all kinds of metaphysical assumptions that are made in this video.
And in fact, they out themselves on this, mm-hmm. which I think is an incredibly important point to understand, and it is incredibly true. He says this in the video, we don't know any more about human existence than you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is absolutely true. So why should I listen to you?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But isn't this the problem of all philosophy and all religion? Every man-made philosophy and religion have a problem. We don't know any more about human existence than you do, right? I mean, this is why I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian because I'm not following after man-made ideas. I'm following after God because I am firmly convinced that I can't figure this out on my own. It's going to need to be revealed to me.
Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that the video tells you, I don't know any more about human existence than you do. But at the same time, here is the good life to live. I mean, I guess you could say that this is just their suggestion rather than a dogmatic assertion that this really is the way it is.
I think that's an important point that I saw as well, Steve, because I think that this constantly comes back to the narcissism of humanity, right? It says this in the video. This story is not about us, he says. But then continues into the video and basically says, but let's make it about us, mm-hmm. right? So that everything that you do and everything that you're going to go experience and all these pleasures, you know, make your life all about you. And let that be the optimism of a completely meaningless existence. At least it was all about you and everything that you wanted.
Everybody wants to feel that purpose in life, right? So all of these philosophical ideas come back almost to smuggle in some kind of purpose in their statements in that, right?
Well, he says this. He says, if our life is the only thing that we get to experience, then it's the only thing that matters.
Like matters in what sense? Like why does it matter? Why does that word slip in there? Matter. Your worldview doesn't give you that privilege of using a word like it matters.
Yeah.
Right? Because everything at the end of the day, if your worldview is true, is just we're just a bunch of colliding particles that are eventually going to cease to move.
Well, the video goes on to say, if the universe has no principles, then the only ones that matter are the ones that we decide on. And again, why is that the case, first of all? Mm-hmm. And second of all, whose principles are the ones that matter? Because if everybody has their own principles and they decide on what's going to matter, I mean, we've said this before and you have to say it again, then that means when a country like Nazi Germany, you know, decides to do what they did, how do we say that that's wrong, that those principles aren't good?
You can't.
You can't. They're the ones that they decided on, right? Or you've got some mass murderer and he decides that's what brings him pleasure. Mm-hmm. How do you decide that those principles aren't okay in a meaningless, valueless, purposeless existence?
This kind of optimistic nihilism, at least the way it's been described in this video here, it just destroys morality and ethics and everything that goes with it. Like, seriously, in the video, you probably noticed him saying this, right? You only get one shot at life, which is scary, but it also sets you free. And I'm thinking, okay, free from what in the first place? But let's move on. Get this. If the universe ends in heat death, every humiliation you suffer in your life will be forgotten. Every mistake you made will not matter in the end. And get this, every bad thing you did will be voided.
So why not do whatever I want?
Exactly, right? And so there's no justice, no moral accountability.
This is the true problem of evil, by the way.
Mm. On the video, it shows a lady kicking a cat.
Did it really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Might as well go kick a cat.
May as well kick a cat.
What difference does it make?
Agreed. Now, here again, though, is where there's no consistency in what's being said. And I think one of the greatest inconsistencies that I saw in the video that I think a lot of nihilists would disagree with, I saw a lot in there that, as I've interacted with different professors and students and whatnot that are nihilists, they wouldn't agree with everything that this video is saying. And one of the things that they would find the most contentious is in it, towards the end, it says, we are truly free in a universe-sized playground. You know, most of the secularists that I've encountered that don't believe in God, that have embraced atheism, have embraced a deterministic universe. A universe that says, yeah, this is all that there is, and there isn't any meaning, purpose, or value in any of it. Because as the video says at the beginning, and even later, that, you know, you are no different than a black hole or a nebula, right? I mean, you are just part of the universe. You're just part of the expansion of these particles in a giant playground, if you will. We need to tease this out. There isn't freedom in that.
I just really need to interject here too.
Steve can't help himself.
When I hear
things like— I can see the look.
Yeah.
He's getting red.
Yeah. See, whenever I hear this sort of thing, I'm just like, I'm shaking my head because I'm like, okay, we're as much the universe as a neutron star or a black hole or a nebula. And in my head, I'm also thinking in a pile of turd. Seriously, yeah. Why is it that we compare ourselves with something so grand as if, but it really, there's no difference between me and a pile of turd.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because we'll fancy it up, Steve. We'll polish that turd and we'll call it, but Steve, you.
That's stardust.
Right there. Stardust. Exactly. That's what they'll do. That's stardust.
Okay, well.
Yeah, and then that's supposed to make it all better, but it's like, well, okay, you mean star dirt? You mean star waste? Right? And now all of a sudden we're like, well, that doesn't sound quite as cool as stardust, right?
That's right. But anyway, then going back to what you said about living in a deterministic universe.
Yeah, and this gets brought out, by the way, at the very beginning of the video where it says, and this a lot of people do hold to, we are made of many little things that make up big things that are not dead. For some reason.
Made up of very like many little dead things that are somehow creating this bigger things that are not dead.
Question mark.
Yeah.
Right. And this is something that we've talked about before, and I hope is starting, our listeners are starting to appreciate that there is a difference between the stuff that something is made of and the purposeful whole that something is made for. And this is the distinction that in this video that they're wrestling with. And this idea that there's the parts of the universe, but there seems to be the purposeful whole of these parts, that these things have come together to form a living organism, for example. And so now what we have is we seem to have two different things. We have the parts that something's made of, but then we have the thing in and of itself. Now, what do we do with that thing? And see, this is where somebody like the French philosopher, mathematician Laplace would come in and would say, well, I could imagine a demon that could have all the information of the universe and understand all of the mechanics of the universe and could calculate all those numbers. We wouldn't use a demon any longer. That's too superstitious. We would use a supercomputer. So I can imagine a supercomputer that could have all the calculations of all the different molecules bouncing off of each other. And if I could calculate all those things, then I could know where those particles are going in the future, and I could know where those particles have come from in the past. Mm-hmm. And in that idea is this idea of determinism. And that is that everything has been determined from the Big Bang. Everything that the universe is made of is determined from the Big Bang and the trajectory that it's going, and we are made of the stuff of the universe, and so we are determined along with the universe. We're part of that universe expanding out into the abyss, a part of those black holes and nebula, and in so, there is no such thing as freedom.
There is no such thing as freedom, and if there's no such thing as freedom, there is also no such thing as knowledge. And if there's no such thing as knowledge, then you don't have such a thing as moral knowledge.
Right.
Right?
And oh, yeah. It creates all just kinds of problems. Continues on. And by the way, I think, Steve, you make such a good point that very few people that have bought into determinism have really thought about. And that is that they make value judgments of people who don't believe in determinism. Mm-hmm. They'll say such things as, you're wrong, or you don't understand the way things really are. Right. You don't have a correct view of the world, mm-hmm. which raises this huge question. You know, you were determined to believe in determinism.
Right.
And I was determined to believe in theism. How can you say that one is right and one is wrong? How can you even know that you're right if you were merely determined to believe that you're right?
A big part of nihilism is moral relativism, right?
Right.
A big foundation of that. I mean, it always comes back to the objective meaning of things, right? And when I started looking at this video, I was brought back to C.S. Lewis' book, Abolition of Man, mm-hmm. right? The first chapter talks about men without chess.
Right.
It kind of succinctly describes everything in the sense that our heads are the meaning. He described our bellies as the instinct, mm-hmm. and our chests were the hearts where truth and objective stuff reside, right? Mm-hmm. So he was basically saying, we don't have this in our culture anymore, right?
Right.
It's gone. We're just reason and instinct, and we go from there. I mean, that is just
pretty... Yeah, what kind of a world does that produce?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting thing is, I was once told... when you look at different ethical systems, a really good test for these ethical systems is, what kind of a moral hero would this produce?
That's a good question.
According to, say, for example, the Judeo-Christian worldview, what would be a Judeo-Christian moral hero? People might think of, you know, for example, Jesus. I mean, that's an easy one. Or somebody like Mother Teresa, right? But then if you look at moral relativism and nihilism and things like that, well, who are the moral heroes? Who are the paragons?
Bertrand Russell. And if you've ever read his biography, you'll know that he has the morals of an alley cat. Tried not to laugh.
There is a fresh way to put it. But truly, like, in a world where morality and ethics is just completely relative. Like, I mean, you look at somebody like Carl Panzram or Ted Bundy. You know, I mean, they really lived out their moral nihilism and moral relativism. I mean, I guess moral relativists might push back and go, well, why not use the example of Martin Luther King Jr. or Mother Teresa and things like that? I'm just like, well, what compels me to choose Martin Luther King Jr. over, say, a slave owner in the 1800s or something like that?
Right? Well, according to the
that's
video,
that's the problem.
Bonus point.
Yeah.
Which I don't know what those do for you.
Bonus points for whom?
Yeah.
To what end?
And to what end? This is, I think, something, though, that comes out in the video towards the end that's, I think, significant. And that is raising this idea that part of the scariness of existence is being alone, and the fear of being alone, and the fear of dying alone, and the fear of not existing alone, and just even the fear of life being alone, that's brought up there at the end. But here's the thing, though, and this is the part of a secular culture that we've got to understand. It's like a black hole, okay, that just sucks every chance of looking for meaning or purpose or value out of the universe. You just doesn't allow it. In particular, what was said in the videos, that we can find some answers. We can go out there and we can try to find some answers. However, God can't be one of those answers that you find. Feel free to go find some answers, but I'm going to place limitations on the conclusions that you can arrive at in this universe.
I mean, he already kind of, or the video already ruled it out right from the get-go, right? This is the universe. I mean, I'm just looking
I know. How does he know? We learned that the lights are not twinkling for us. They just are.
Like, that's a metaphysical statement. That's not even a scientific statement. That there is no purpose behind these things is a metaphysical statement. How do you arrive that? How do you figure that out in a test tube?
And
so
notice you can't stay there, because we're going to have optimistic nihilism. Mm-hmm. So in the midst of this, again, what's going to happen is going to try to develop a way that we can create some sort of meaning and purpose out of all this, even though it's just plain pretend.
In one of the other articles I was reading, the lady was saying this. She said, what it does suggest is that as purposeless as human evolution is, we generally benefit as a species from a belief in it. I came across
it
this
being
belief in the way things are.
Okay.
Yeah, the life we have right now, I guess. I came across this believe that and believe in. I don't know if you've heard that before.
I remember Jim always talks about it.
Yeah. Two dimensions of belief. Yeah. I mean, we can't move on to the belief in unless we have some foundation of belief that, right? Mm-hmm. Some kind of objective foundation or stuff we draw from.
Right. You can't even build any sort of intellectual podium, so to speak, or something like that without having some kind of very basic presuppositions.
So she skipped that whole part and went right to belief in, right? But where does she get all her foundations for what she believes in?
Exactly. Just like in this video, they're making metaphysical assumptions.
Yeah. I was playing off of what you were saying earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. In order that they can propound their view here, that it's just up to you.
Now, I think something that might be good for us just to close on here, and as we juxtapose the Christian worldview to this. And again, this is another aspect about the video that I think they get it right. Mm-hmm. And they get it right in this. This story is not about us. I think that's right. But it's interesting. because he goes on to try to make the story about us, right? So we'll say, listen, we're not the center of the universe, but in optimistic nihilism, in every worldview that you'll find, but let's make us, you know, every secular, you know, worldview you'll find, but let's make us the center of the universe so that everything's about me and I get to choose what's right and what's good. And the Bible is not saying that. The Bible's actually saying that this story is about God and that God is focused and concerned and making it about us. There's a difference there, right? Where God is the center of this story and God is making us the center of this story because of God's desire to be in relationship with us and our ability then to be in relationship with God. And so Paul says this in Galatians chapter 5. As I was thinking about this video, I was thinking about Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 to 15 that say this, "But you were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh." Now, this is what I see in secular worldviews, right? That obviously, we have consciousness and we have this ability to think and reason. So I'm going to use this as an opportunity to say, hey, there isn't any meaning in all this, but I'm going to decide what makes me happy and gives me pleasure, and then I'm going to go do those things, right? He says, but through love, and this is where Christianity is so unique, but through love, serve one another. Listen, if you want to actually be fulfilled and enjoy this life, don't make this life all about you, right? Why is that? Well, he's going to continue on. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. This is what you were created for. You were created for relationship. But narcissism doesn't lead to relationship, right? Lewis makes his point in his book, The Great Divorce, right? It's actually just going to destroy you. This is optimistic nihilism. It will just destroy you. But, and then Paul says this, but if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. And this concerns me for our culture. Doesn't it concern you? When people start to preach and teach, which is happening at our universities, this optimistic nihilism stuff, and say, oh, this is going to lead to good things in the future. You know, we've seen historically, and Paul's saying here, no, it's not going to lead to good things. It's going to lead to people continuing to destroy one another because it breaks relationship. It doesn't build relationship.
All right, let's wrap up there. Thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll come back next week with more stuff to think about.